Accession number 28415, Reel 3.
Wrong case, Reel 3. You were telling me about when you were doing guard duty at night, surrounded by the Japanese.
That was most nerve-wracking. I mean, just imagine the foxholes around you were the rest of the battery, or your squad, better, about half a dozen men. And you each took a turn to stand outside. It was as usual, 2 hours on and 4 hours off. That's always been the same in the army. And you can just imagine, it was pitch black. You'd hear a noise, and you think to yourself, is that an animal? Is that a Japanese patrol? Should I sound the alarm and get the lads out, because they'd just done theirs? Or what should I do? You didn't want to sound the alarm in case it was an animal, and you knew damn well if you didn't and it was Japanese, they wouldn't have a chance to get out. And that was most nerve-wracking, night time. You were so glad when your 2 hours was up.
And what sort of weapon were you carrying?
At that time I was carrying a 303 Lee Enfield rifle. But during the whole campaign I've had Bren gun and Tommy gun, and of course bayonet. Not all at the same time, of course, but individually.
So where you were with the guns, and they were they moving all the time, or were you first stationary in different places before for a while?
No, the guns had to be stationary, of course, for firing.
Yeah, but they would stay there for like a week or so, or they move every day, or?
No, not move every day, the advance was very slow.
Yeah.
Very slow indeed, yeah.
So that you would be there with the guns and your survey regiment, and you'd make an encampment.
That's right, dear.
Did you say you slept in slip trenches, or did you have those for defensive purposes?
The First World War was slip trenches, but we had our own individual holes, which are called foxholes. Mm-hmm. And when the convoy stopped, we had to get out and dig a hole by the side of the lorry, so in case there was any Jap patrols around, we could get in and be protected from shrapnel or anything like that. And I remember once, I had a 1508 Bedford at this time, not a Jeep, and this 1508 Bedford was a blessing because you could sleep in the back of it. And two of us, me and my mate. So the convoy stopped, we got out and we dug our foxhole, and we dug it big enough for the two of us together. And then we had an idea. We would cover it in brushwood and camouflage it. If any Jap came snooping round, he'd fall in there. Good. He gets into sleep. Rifles with one round up the spout. Then it's fixed. Safety catch on, all ready. Sure enough, in the night we heard the crash. Got out as quick as we could. This is it. Get ready. Out we jumped, just in time to see a raccoon getting out of the thing and running away. This raccoon had fallen in. Weren't we glad?
Did you get any sort of snakes and nasties up there as well?
No, because all the firing frightened all the animals away. Mm. We didn't see any animals at all. No, not when the firing was taking place. Mm. I mean, explosions amongst the trees and all that. And then another time, I mean, there's some things you'll never forget. I was put in charge of a squad who dug a big hole, but less than the size of this room, and all the earth made parapets all the way around, which you would lean onto fire. And I was in charge, I was a bombardier in charge, and I was told that if the red very light goes up, Japanese patrols are in the activity in the area. And when the green very light goes up, then it's all clear. Stand down. I get smeared down to sleep, pulls a mosquito net over me. Straight away up went the red very light. So So we all stood two ready, rifles ready on the phone, and my mate was standing next to me with a hand grenade in his hand, and he pulled the pin out. And I thought to myself, well, if he stops the bullet, what's going to happen to that hand grenade in here? So I ordered him to put it back. I always remember his name, Jock McLean. I ordered him to put the pin back and not to pull the pin out until he threw it. The next thing, I felt a bullet, the wind of a bullet, go past my face. It was this side, I always remember. And straight away, my grandfather's words came to me. He spent the First World War in the trenches, and the last thing he said to me before I left was, Ronnie, that was he called me, Ronnie, never want to look over the top, always keep your head down. And those words came back to me then, and I'd keep my head down. Yeah. And he used to beat his chest and say, I think he was about 70 then. He was a big, tall man. There he is, bless him. He was mother and father to me, he was. He used to say, I'm going to be here, I'm going to live till that lad comes home. And blow me, we were just approaching Southampton when he died. Mm. yeah, because, as I said, he was mother and father to me.
So, some of these nights, so you didn't get much sleep at nights then, because you were...
Well, not every night. No, I mean, we always, occasionally had to be awakened and told to stand to.
Were you on dry rations there, or did they manage to get some food?
Mostly we had rations brought up, but sometimes we just had bully beef and biscuits.
So, did you were under risk of attack and ambush when you drove the officers to the frontline unit?
I was very lucky as regards things like that. There was an incident called the admin box that was administration people, clerks and things like that. The Japanese broke through and they murdered all the nurses and the doctors, and the patients in bed were all bayoneted. Not many people know about that, but that's in the book that General Slim wrote, Defeat into Victory, before the Japs were pushed back again. At that time I was driving a jeep. I was instructed to take some batteries up to the front. I always remember we sort of got lost, we didn't know which way to go. There were tracks diverting, and it was eerie, it was dead quiet. All you could see was a dead mule and lorries down below that had gone over the side. And yeah, we took one track, and out of the bushes came a red cap, military police. Where are you going, soldier? I'm taking these batteries up to the front. Oh, no, you're not. The Japs have broken through. Turn your jeep round and go back. That was the admin box. Mm. But it hadn't been for that military policeman, I'm sure I would have driven into the lot. Yeah. And I think that was the nearest I ever got.
Did the news of that get around the troops quickly? What had happened?
Oh, yes. And we took no prisoners after that.
So you had female nurses with you, did you?
Female nurses, not right forward. No. They were back mostly in India. I was evacuated with malaria. And I was in hospital with malaria when the atom bomb fell. And I can always remember the chap in the opposite bed shouting, "Hooray, lads, that's it, we're all going home now." Yeah, I always remember that. And so we did. I came home on a hospital ship.
Was malaria quite a problem then?
Oh, definitely malaria. There was more casualties from malaria than was what from wounds. Yes.
Did you get bitten at night when you were on guard duty? Is that how it happened?
Well, no, because we had ourselves covered up. You never knew when you got bitten. I mean, during the daytime, we would go with nothing on at all. But at night time, if you weren't careful, then you'd get bitten. If you weren't covered up, or if you weren't under your mosquito net. I couldn't tell you when I was bitten. And when we came home, The ship approached the docks at Southampton. It was foggy. And on the quayside were about six women, two officers' wives, to welcome us home. No bands, no nothing. No counselling, no nothing. Off the ship, straight into hospital.
Yeah. So you were up in the mountains and stuff for quite a while.
In Burma?
Yes.
Yeah. I always remember seeing Mountbatten driving a jeep coming down the mountainside on the tracks. He came to a hairpin bend and nearly turned it over. We liked Mountbatten. He used to come out and he used to stand on a box and give us a pep talk. And once he said to us, "You are not the forgotten army, for the simple reason they never heard of you." That was Mountbatten.
So you kept moving forward, and obviously, as you said, you had a bit of a defeat at one point.
Oh, well, the Japs pushed us right out, yes, to start off with.
Yes.
And then General Slim came and formed the 14th Army, and we pushed the Japs back. And now we have to meet his daughter, Una, forget her name. She's married to a farmer, and she attends all our dinners. She's a lovely person.
When we were pushed back, was that a bit of a rout? I mean, did you have to go back
quickly?
No,
there was no rout. It was organised. Yeah. Organised retreat.
So, was that where people get disheartened?
Well, obviously, yes. Yes.
So how far did you get pushed back?
That I can't recollect. I think right out of Burma we're pushed back. I can't recollect it. My memory's gone. I can only remember the places I visited. Buthidong, Rathidong. Well, I can only remember the names. I can't remember what it was like. Because when we made an advance, all we found was a burnt-out village. No women or anything like that, like it did in the big war. I mean, when they made an advance, they were greeted. Flowers, etc. When we made an advance, just a burnt-out village and nothing else.
So you were there when they pushed forward again?
Oh, yes, lovely. Yes, that's right. The places, as I just said, Buthidong, Rathidong, Cox's Bazaar. I can't remember anymore.
Was it difficult getting all the rounds for the guns, the 25-pounders, to keep up with the supply for what the guns needed?
No, there was no difficulty there. I mean, the big fights, which I didn't take place in, of course, was Imphal and Kohima. That's where the big fights took place. And that's where the Japs were eventually defeated.
Did you have news of that?
Yes. Half of my regiment was flown up to Imphal. I was in the half that stayed in the Arakan. We got news of that, all right.
How many of them survived that?
You mean the ones at Imphal? I couldn't tell you enough. It was a big fight. And we remember them now. We know Kohima epitaph. You've heard of it, haven't you?
Yes.
When you go home, remember them from that.
Yes. Your tomorrow we gave us.
That's right, love. And we have a meeting once a month, and a committee meeting once a month as well, and we always recite that before we start.
So you move forward, and they had these decisive battles. And how far did you get? Did you actually...
The farthest I got, I'm sure, was Buthidong. Either Buthidong or Rathidong. I can't remember which one it was. And then I went down with malaria.
I mean, is that a quick thing, or did you just feel poorly to start with? Or?
Well, you feel rotten. You've got a smashing headache, and you're weak as a kitten. And you sweat, and then you go cold. And you're just useless.
So how did they evacuate you? In the back of a lorry, or...?
I remember being evacuated on a stretcher on what's called a duck. That was a big vehicle that can go in the sea and on the land with wheels. And I was put on a stretcher on top of that and evacuated out. With others, of course.
How long did it take you to get to hospital?
Can't remember, love. I was
out of it.
Almost unconscious, I suppose. Can't remember much about it. No.
So you were taken to the back?
Taken back to the first hospital there was.
Yes.
There were nurses there, I remember. I remember one incident. They brought in an Air Force man who'd crashed his plane, and he was delirious. He was effing and blinding at the poor nurses. Of course, he didn't know. And they just took it in their stride. Queen Alexander nurses, they were.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's about all I can remember, dear.
So, having had the malaria, you then were shipped back?
Shipped back.
After a while.
That's yeah, right, because the atom bomb had dropped. The atom bomb had dropped, so we didn't want us anymore.
No. And how much information did you get about that?
None at all. We just knew that they dropped an atom bomb and that the war was over. That's all we knew.
So did you have a celebration?
Well, no, not in the hospital here. No. We didn't still celebrate that. We weren't in a fit state to celebate.
No.
We were just
pleased
we were going home.
How long did it take you to get back?
I can't remember the exact time, but we came back through the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the ship had a collision in the Bitter Lakes. That's at the end of the Suez Canal. It had a collision. I remember that very plainly.
What, did it hit another ship? Or?
Yes, there was an American, might have been a tanker, I don't remember, anchored, two or three anchored. I was in the bows of our ship, and I could see it was getting nearer and nearer, and I looked up at the bridge. Suddenly one of the officers came tearing down. He just held the handrails, I don't think his feet touched the steps, and down he came. He ran to the bows, threw out the anchor, which he did, but it was too late. We hit this American ship and went along the side of it, taking everything it had, boats, ladders and all down lot. There was nobody on deck before we hit it. They all came running up.
Was it stationary or was it moving?
We were moving, they were stationary.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they were stationary.
So it was the British anchor, fault.
They were anchored fore and aft.
It
was the fault of the pilot. We had a pilot on board. Consequently, we had to put into port said and have the bows filled with concrete where the hole was.
Mm.
And of course, when we crossed the Bay of Biscay, it was a bit rough. There was a storm. And that's about all I can remember of it.
So,
as I say, most everything you forget.
It was a bit of an anticlimax coming back at Southampton.
Definitely anticlimax. We thought at least we'd have a reception.
Mm. How many people were on the trip?
Six women, which I believe could have been officers' wives, who got the notification. Nothing else.
How many people were on your ship then?
Well, my ship. It was a hospital ship, so I couldn't tell you how many were on it there. I know they were all hospital casualties.
Mm.
And one thing I do remember, as we approached the dockside, I saw a bus with all its lights on, and I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
We'd never seen lights before. It was wonderful. I was fascinated by it. Mm. This bus with all lights on, double decker.
So did you feel like you'd been let down?
Oh yes, definitely yes, as we were called the Forgotten Army. Yes.
So when
but we understood it, because the enemy was just across the channel, wasn't it?
Mm.
So we understood that and mourned about it.
So, time you've been evacuated and came back, when was it, about Christmas or?
I've got the dates down there, so.
January 46th.
That's right, yeah.
So, a bit of an anticlimax for you, really.
Oh, yes. But then, I count my blessings. I came out unscathed. What annoyed me, they gave me a pension of 7 and 6 a week. And I got so fed up of going to Exeter for reassessments, I told him to keep it and accepted £80.
Because you were in the regular army, did you keep signed on or did you?
No. When I joined the army, I signed on for 3 years with the colours and 7 years on reserve. But of course, being invalided out, they didn't want me anymore, so there was no reserve.
Mm-hmm. So have you had problems with malaria since then?
Only for a short while. I used to have violent headaches and, as I say, bad dreams. Well, I'm still having bad dreams now.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm dreaming that I've lost my rifle, that I'm lost altogether. All the rest of the lads have either gone on leave or gone somewhere and I'm lost. I don't know where to go. I still have those dreams. And the wife tells me I jump in bed sometimes.
And when were you reunited with your wife? Did she come to the hospital?
No. This is vague. No, she didn't come to the hospital. The hospital was in Cardiff, Whitchurch. No, I've got it wrong. I was united with the wife as soon as after we docked. And then afterwards I had to go to hospital. And the wife met me in Paddington Station. And I was the only one who got off the train, and she didn't recognise me. She said I was like an old man. Before I went out, it was a pot of hair down the middle. When I came back, I didn't have any. She didn't recognise me. No.
Did it take some while to get adjusted?
Oh, yes. It took me years to get adjusted, dear. I couldn't hold a job. I mean, I was 7 years in the army. I moved from job to job. I just could not settle. I'd done everything you could imagine. Tree cutting, washing dishes in hotels, taxi driving, bus driving, shop work. I just couldn't settle until finally I started my own business, driving school. And I did that for 32 and a half years. That's when I settled down. Until I retired, of course. So as you can gather, I was one of the lucky ones. Yeah.
What do you remember most? What's your most outstanding memory?
The outstanding memory, dear, was the bullet that went past my face.
Any regrets?
No regrets, no. Well, we all regret our wasted youth, don't we? That's the only regret we have, wasted youth. And what's it for? We defended India, and now India's gone. I'm now the standard bearer for the Burma Star Association, Tobey branch. And whenever I march on ceremonial occasions, commemorations, carrying that standard, I think of one thing only. Skeletons buried in Burma, in the jungle. No known graves, there's thousands of them. That's what I think of.
Have you ever been back?
No, dear. I had the opportunity to go back under the late scheme, but what's the use of going back? It'll all be grown over again. No. I'd rather spend that money on holidays with the wife in this country.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I can't think of anything else, my love. Probably will have after you've gone. I remember once driving the jeep over the mountain pass. As I said before, a mountain this side, thousands of feet drop that side, and there was a blind bend to the left. And as we were going round the bend, what we didn't know was cut into the mountain with a 25 pounder gun. And just as we got abreast of him, he opened up. God, how I prevented going over the side, I don't know. That sticks in your mind.
Well, that's lovely. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you for your patience.